And welcome to the Morning Magazine for Thursday, March 24th on listener-supported KGNU. 4 minutes after 8 o'clock, I'm Sam Fuqua, sitting in for Shannon Young this morning. Coming up, a bill to strengthen protections for mobile homeowners is advancing at the state legislature. We'll talk with an advocate. We'll also hear about an annual sleepout event that raises money and awareness about homeless youth. Our regular Thursday morning visit from John Lendorf with Radio Nibbles rounds out this half hour. We check in with BBC again at 8:30, and then this morning on A Public Affair, Tish Buford takes a look at Colorado's child welfare system and how the state separates black women and women of color from their children. At 9 o'clock, it's the March installment of the Radio Book Club, a collaboration between KGNU and the Boulder Bookstore. This morning, we'll hear Fort Collins author Stephen Schwartz discuss his latest novel, The Tenderest of Strings, a family drama that is set in northeastern Colorado. Our morning of diverse music begins at 9:30. Shauna will be in to bring you the morning sound alternative. All that's still ahead. We begin, as always, with news headlines. Here's Benita Lee.
Colorado's entire congressional delegation is urging President Biden to keep U.S. Space Command in Colorado Springs. In a letter to Biden, Democratic Senators Michael Bennett and John Hickenlooper, along with bipartisan representatives, said moving the military base would risk national security in light of Russia's war on Ukraine. Peterson Air Force Base was chosen as the temporary home to Space Command in 2019. It was to remain there until at least 2026, but former President Donald Trump announced in 2021 that Space Command would relocate to Huntsville, Alabama. Officials are reviewing that decision. Space Command's missions include missile warning and defense and national security communications. Bipartisan lawmakers introduced a Colorado House draft bill this week to crack down on illegal fentanyl. The bill would make a drug dealer liable for sentencing under Colorado's harshest felony drug charge in cases of overdose deaths. That means up to 32 years in prison and up to $1 million in fines. Fentanyl is a synthetic opioid that drug dealers mix with counterfeit drugs that look like oxycodone. The highly addictive drug is deadly in tiny amounts and last year led to the deaths of over 750 people in Colorado. Some Republicans and addiction experts are criticizing the bill because they want stronger penalties for people caught possessing fentanyl. Democrats in the state legislature sent Governor Jared Polis a bill affirming access to abortion and contraception in Colorado. KGNU's Steve Miller has more.
Governor Polis has said he will sign the measure, House Bill 1279, into law. The Colorado Sun reports that after 13 hours of debate with Republicans fighting the measure, legislation passed the Senate by a 20-15 party line vote on Wednesday. The bill was debated in the House earlier this month for 24 consecutive hours in what was one of the longest debates in the legislature's history. Democrats introduced the legislation in response to questions about the future of Roe v. Wade. The U.S. Supreme Court will soon have a chance to overturn Roe v. Wade in a ruling on a case out of Mississippi. The ruling could potentially open the door for abortion restrictions in Colorado at the county or municipal level. Without the protections in Roe v. Wade, conservative Colorado counties or municipalities could try to pass local measures banning or significantly limiting abortion access. The new House bill, once signed into law by Polis, would allow challenging those local measures in court. I'm Steve Miller for KGNU.
Douglas County school officials voted Tuesday to name Aaron Kane the new superintendent. The Board of Education's majority conservative directors led the vote. The job opened up in February when the board fired former superintendent Corey Wise, saying that they did not feel supported by him and wanted to take the district in a different direction. Students and teachers protested Wise's removal. The board still faces a lawsuit alleging that members violated the state's open meeting law when making the decision to fire Wise. An avalanche on the west side of Loveland Pass slid into an SUV on Wednesday. No injuries were reported, and transportation officials cleared the snow, allowing the SUV's occupants to drive away. Also on Wednesday, search and rescue teams investigated an avalanche at Berthoud Pass after receiving a report that two people were possibly caught in the slide. A rescue dog and avalanche equipment confirmed there were no victims. In today's weather, it still feels like spring and March, with sunshine and wind gusts of up to 26 miles per hour throughout the Front Range. In Boulder, a high near 63 with nighttime temperatures around 36. In Denver, a high near 67 and a low around 34. And in Fort Collins, the high will be around 68, the low around 33. Outside the Boulder studios, it's 45 degrees. For KGNU, I'm Benita Lee.
Ten minutes after eight now at listener-supported KGNU. A bill to strengthen protections for mobile home park residents in Colorado cleared another hurdle yesterday at the state capitol. For more details, we spoke with Cecia Guadarrama Trejo. She is the associate director of 9 to 5, a nonprofit group that advocates for working women and families.
So the bill does a couple of things, and at the heart of it is protecting affordability and stability for mobile home residents. Among some of the top changes, one of them is we're working on making sure that there would be a lot rent stabilization. So right now, rent can increase once a year, and this would basically cap the amount at 3% or 100 CPI, whichever is greater, to make sure that, yes, landlords are going to be made whole, but that also residents are not facing these really high rent increases that oftentimes can lead to displacement. It's also going to update some of the opportunity to purchase protections that we worked on in 2020. For example, extending the timeline that residents get to organize and make an offer to purchase the land when their park is up for sale. Right now, that timeline is 90 days, and that would be expanded to 180 days because we have seen that those 90 days are definitely not enough time. It creates a greater accountability and robust enforcement program through the Department of DOLA, and then it also creates some measures around compensation for homeowners if, a park were to close and folks would have to move or would have to be relocated elsewhere for the park closure.
So let's talk about a couple of those elements of the bill in more detail, one of which you referenced the bill passed a couple of years ago that was designed to give residents a chance to purchase their park if the owner is putting it up for sale. And I think I heard you say that the 90-day time period is just not enough time for residents to get organized and do that. Is that right?
That's correct. We have seen how parks have gone up for sale at a very rapid rate. This bill went into effect in the summer, the fall of 2020. And from June, July 2020 to September of 2021, we saw 80 parks go up for sale, 48 of those who have already been sold, and only two of those were bought by residents. I'm sure those numbers are higher now. And one of the biggest challenges is this 90-day window where they both have to organize to get the 51% of the residents to say we're interested and to find the financing. It's just a very, very short timeline that has been very challenging to be able to do all of that in 90 days.
And those figures you just cited in terms of the number of parks sold, what's driving that? It's just a very profitable form of real estate investment?
Yes, we're seeing more and more out-of-state corporate owners, corporate entities that are buying up these communities in Colorado. They're able to oftentimes make cash offers or buy these communities for millions and millions of dollars. One of the most expensive parks sold in Fort Collins for a little bit over $47 million. It had close to 400 lots, and it is, something that they see as a a way that they can buy and then obviously like profit off of, but that usually means that they come in, they increase the rent, they might try to change community rules, they might try to change the lease, but at the end of the day, like, you know, that is done by increasing the rent or increasing or creating new fees that clearly falls on the homeowners.
And then finally, another detail was about, I think if I heard you correctly, capping the percentage of annual lot rent increase. Can you explain that a little more? And what kinds of rent increases have some homeowners faced from their park ownership?
Yes, the bill would cap the rent lot rent increase to 3% or 100% of CPI. So, you know, that doesn't mean that they can't ever increase rent. Rent increases would still be allowed, but we are looking at making sure that those increases are reasonable. We have seen the way that rents have continued to increase. That is the number one issue when you talk to homeowners, when you knock on doors in mobile home communities, is not being able to keep up and afford these rent increases, especially for a lot of our communities who are homeowners on a fixed income or our communities with disabilities or folks who are retired, essential workers. And in particular, with our work on the ground, we saw one park in Arvada that increased their rent 3 times over the pandemic. Before the bill, the previous legislation went into effect that could only allow once a year rent increase, they had increased the rent twice and then once more last year, and at least one of those increases was of 10%. And even after we met virtually with the owner to share and hear from the families directly that live there how COVID had impacted them, they refused to cancel the rent increases or roll them back or decrease them. And our residents were told, you know, if you just can't pay, we'll help you sell your home and you can go elsewhere.
That's Cecia Guadarrama Trejo. She's the associate director of 9to5, a nonprofit that advocates for working women and families. Excuse me. The bill to strengthen protections for mobile home park owners passed the House Transportation Committee yesterday, now going to House Appropriations. And we'll continue to follow that progress on KGNU. 16 minutes after 8 now at listener-supported community radio. The annual Sleep Out event to raise awareness about teen homelessness is happening tonight. It's a statewide event, and KGNU's Rosana Longo-Better spoke with Chris Nelson and Alex Berglund about the complexities of poverty and homelessness for the teen population.
The event program and candlelight vigil, which precedes the Sleep Out starting at 10 p.m. tonight, has a specific agenda. Can you walk us through the details, Chris?
You know, we talk about this being a movement, and our name is Together because it requires that as communities, as a society, that we don't tolerate that young people are on our streets or experiencing homelessness. And so we spend some time coming together as community, reconnecting, especially after the pandemic, visiting. We all share stories about why we are sleeping out and why this cause is important to us. Then we have a program that shares in our country, if we extend the definition of youth and young adults up to age 24, there are 4.2 million young people in our country that experience homelessness every year. So we talk about that. We help educate people about the issue. The best part of the evening is that we honor a young person with a Youth Enterprise Award. And so it's acknowledging the hard work and resilience that they have demonstrated in our programs and in their lives. I mean, that comes with a check to them as well. And they get to share their stories of success. We don't believe in sharing the stories of the hardship. We believe in sharing the stories of success. And there are many, many of them. The Candlelight Vigil is really important. There is not a lot of great data about what happens to young people on the streets, or how many people are experiencing homelessness. Because as we talked even before this interview, young people don't want to be found. Young people don't want to, they don't trust adults if they have come from environments where adults have caused them harm. So what we do know is factually, there are over 5,000 young people in our country that die every year on our streets. Those young people die from exposure to elements, assault, suicide. The risk factors for a young person on the street for suicidality or chronic health conditions development are significant. And so the Candlelight Vigil is to honor those that have passed this year on our streets and remind us the importance of helping them get off the streets. So that's not the outcome. And then we gather on the lawn and get into our sleeping bags and chat with each other about what we can do, wish each other a good night's sleep, and then prepare soft items to throw at those of the folks that are snoring while we're trying to sleep.
What would you like people to know about this issue and the need to raise funds to support teens that are experiencing homelessness? What do you think people get out of an experience like this, Alex?
As Chris mentioned, you know, this really is a terrific opportunity for people to learn about this issue and get involved in any way that works for them. And this event continues to grow year after year. Over the years, Together Sleep Out events have raised hundreds of thousands of dollars and gotten hundreds and hundreds of people, thousands of people involved in our program and in this mission. You know, over the years, people continue to participate in this event because it is truly a very humbling experience. And it's a really, really unique night for people to be able to reflect and just gain a little bit of insight into some of the very difficult nights that millions of young people endure every night.
I'd like to ask the listeners to just take a moment and think about being 17 years old. Old and not knowing where your next meal is coming from, where you're going to sleep, or what threats exist in your life when you don't have a system of support and a hand to hold through those paths that for even the most privileged young people, that age is difficult. It's a hard time developmentally. If taking a moment to consider how that might feel doesn't ignite in people a passion around solving this problem, there are other questions those folks ought to be asking themselves. As a society, as a community, we know in Boulder and other communities, there's a lot of talk about how do we address homelessness? What are the ways to address homelessness? And there are a lot of different opinions and perspectives. And so one that I will share with you that comes after the compassion, right, and the intolerance of knowing that there are young people on our streets is that more than half of people who are chronically homeless in our communities across this country began those episodes of homelessness as a young person. And so if we can prevent a young person from becoming chronically homeless, from having extended periods of time of instability, over time, we are solving the broader issue of homelessness.
I have been speaking with Chris Nelson and Alex Bergland together, a nonprofit organization dedicated to awareness of youth experiencing homelessness. For KGNU, I am Rosanna Longo-Better.
And the annual Sleep Out event begins tonight at 6 at First United Methodist Church of Boulder. That's downtown. There'll be an event program and a candlelight vigil. The Sleep Out starts at 10. And those registered to the Sleep Out will be in the audience for the initial event and vigil, along with other local leaders. It all raises awareness and a lot of money to support homeless youth. 22 minutes after 8 now at listener-supported KGNU.
Everybody eats when they come to my house. I fix your favorite dishes.
Cab Galloway introducing our old friend John Lendorf in Radio Nivels. Great to see you in the studio, John.
Great to see you, Sam. We were just saying we've been chatting for some time over the years, and it's good to actually be in the studio for one thing.
But it's great to see you, and great to see your guest.
Yeah, my guest today is Deb Cameron. She is the food editor of Yellow Scene magazine. If you're not familiar with it, it's a monthly publication that focuses on the East County. East Boulder County in a lot of different ways. And I met Deb a bit back, and we've been talking about food, and so we're going to kind of flip the script here this morning. Instead of me babbling on about food and issues and stuff, Deb wanted to talk to me about food.
Well, I just had a few questions, and thanks for having me on the show. I really appreciate it. I have a soft spot for radio, and I'm glad to be here. But I was curious about some things as you've experienced them, and they might give me some ideas on how I can proceed. The first question that I had for you, so let's say you've got somebody that you really want to get to know and talk to, and you need to make an introduction or convince them to be interviewed, or how would you do it? Or what's the most creative example of that you can think of that you've done in your career?
You know, I've talked to a lot of different really interesting people. What I find is that, you know, some people are easy. You know, one time I interviewed Paul Prudhomme, the chef from New Orleans, and he was very easy. And, we just chatted away and had a great time because he was comfortable with it. What I like is when I find somebody, you know, I bring people on and I talk to them in print that are not familiar. They're not comfortable with talking to people. And I feel like my job then is to connect with them. Well, it's almost a therapeutic relationship where I'm bringing them out of themselves. The best thing is to ask people about themselves.
Okay.
And have them tell you their story. And I always find that's more interesting.
Then one thing that I do as a parent, my kids are 12 and 16, is I love to demonstrate to them what I do for my work because I love what I do for my job. Have you been able to do that very often? And maybe how have you found ways to do that? Or?
We really should have my son Hans here. Sam will remember, but in the early days of Radio Nibbles, Hans came with me every week and sat here. There's a wonderful picture of him with huge headphones on his little head. He learned a lot about food and also about radio. Everybody knew him. Later on, he actually did some volunteer work here at the station, and he always just now he's a fine cook himself. He knows a tremendous amount about food, and it makes me very proud. He got to go on dining review dinners and things, and so he had an unusual food upbringing.
Yeah, I think sometimes my kids are as creative or as interested diners as I am, and so I try to bring them with me when I can. But the other question that I had, I'm struggling with editing myself. And I'm never sorry once I take out some things, but it's a hard decision to make. Have you had to make those calls?
Every single thing I've ever done, every radio show, every piece of writing, I've written it too long. I have several pieces today that are, you know, they're sitting at about 2,000 words and they need to be 500. Writing is chopping. What I do is dump everything into, you know, and then I start chopping things out. What's important to me when it's done, and the best thing you can do is read it aloud. It should sound like you. And sometimes when you say it out loud, you go, oh, that doesn't need to be there. And you concentrate and condense it, prioritize the best things you've got.
What makes you say something doesn't need to be there?
Some of that is just raw, you know, having done it long enough.
Okay.
Also, you have to trust your own editing and go, yeah, nobody wants to hear that. So you end up with all this great leftover stuff, but in the end, you know, time and space, you know.
Got any headline writing tips?
Headline writing tips? Don't use your opening line.
Oh, sure.
Right?
Yep.
Make me want to read the story. When I was a newspaper editor, the most important things were, you know, people would get all hung up on the third paragraph and what was in it and stuff. And I'm going, look, you know, you got 5 seconds, maybe 15, in front of people. you know, when you're writing something. You better have a great headline. That's why I started writing my own headlines. Any story you see of mine in the Boulder Weekly, I wrote the headline. Mm-hmm. Because I don't, you know, I know what the story's about, and also I want them. They look at the headline, they look at the photo, they look at the cut line, they look at the first sentence, and I go, that first sentence, you know, you better grab them by the face, you know. Now it's my turn.
Okay.
You're covering the East County. What are some of the best things you've tasted lately?
Last weekend I had hot beer.
And
I went to Primitive Brewing, which is in Prospect neighborhood, just across from Babette's. And they stuck a poker into my dark beer. It's a big mug of it.
That's a red hot poker.
A red hot poker from the fire. As opposed to from the refrigerator. And it made the foam swell up. It tasted a little like marshmallows, and it was delicious. And it didn't make the beer too hot.
One more?
The fried rice at Suelo's Tiki Bar. It's delicious. You can have it any meal. I swear I could have it for breakfast. It was delicious.
Hot beer? Seriously?
Hot beer. You know, I just to see that look of surprise on your face, because I know you've had a few beers in your time.
A few cold ones, yeah. I guess the hot one will be in my future. Well, Deb, thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
Great to see you, Sam.
It's good to see you. John Lundorf is here every single Thursday morning for Radio Nibbles. And you'll be back next Thursday and on into the future.
Yep. And you can read Deb's food writing at yellowscene.com.
Correct. And on Facebook as well.
Great. Thanks for being here.
Thank you again for having me.
Good to see you, John.
Take care.
8:30 at listener-supported KGNU. Sunny and breezy today with highs in the mid-60s along the Front Range of Colorado. Stay tuned next for an update on news from the BBC.
BBC News, I'm John Shea. The Ukrainian Navy says it's destroyed a Russian landing craft anchored off the occupied port of Berdyansk. Pictures on social media show a massive explosion above a huge warship. Ukraine says its forces are now shifting onto the offensive in much of the country. The Defence Ministry posted footage of missiles shooting down four Russian helicopters near Kherson. The authorities in Mariupol say Russian forces besieging the city are in the process of forcibly deporting 15,000 people to Russia. That's half the residents of the Left Bank district. NATO leaders have pledged to do more to support Ukraine after holding an emergency summit in Brussels. The NATO chief, Jens Stoltenberg, confirmed that the alliance would increase its military aid. Russia's defence minister, Sergei Shoigu, has resurfaced after disappearing from public view for 2 weeks. Official footage showed him briefing the Security Council and President Putin. The Solomon Islands are negotiating a deal with China that could see the Pacific nation used as a base for Chinese warships. The two countries have just signed an assistance agreement on policing, but a leaked document suggests they're pursuing a wider security arrangement. Police in central Somalia say more than 30 people were killed in two jihadist attacks. They say a suicide bomber killed a member of parliament and several of her guards late on Wednesday. The second attack came from an explosive-laden vehicle. Palestinians living in the Negev Desert in southern Israel say they're fearful following the formation of a Jewish vigilante group. Residents voiced concerns after reports that a former police officer had set up an armed civilian brigade. And Turkey has urged the warring sides in Libya to refrain from taking steps that may exacerbate the conflict between two rival governments. Ankara has supported the former unity government militarily. It's now urged all parties to follow the democratic process.
Welcome back to NewsHour.
Good morning and welcome to KGNU Public Affair. I'm your host, Tish Buford. In studio this morning, we have two very special guests that I want to introduce you guys to. And we're going to be addressing a very serious topic here. This is something that you all need to pay attention to and be mindful of. And as with every show that we have that comes on the air, we try to inform and we try to uplift and educate our community. And this particular segment will be no different. We have a phenomenal young lady who is doing great work in our community, and it is an honor to have her. We have Ms. Martha Ray, and she is a clinical consultant with the Office of Respondent Parent Counsel. And today we have a special guest with her, and I'm going to save her identity for the second half of the interview, but she is an extraordinary young lady. She is a mother of a beautiful young boy, and she has been experiencing just unthinkable circumstances in losing custody of her child. And we're going to be getting into the deficiencies of the child welfare system and the mothers that lose their children due to temporary mental health or felonious issues. So let's get into it today. We're going to be talking about children separation from their mothers and this pertaining to Black women and women of color. So I want to welcome into the studio for the first half of our interview this morning, Martha Ray. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I am well.
And Martha, we have you here today because you're going to give us a background on the issue that is going on here in Denver and Colorado with Black mothers and mothers that are women of color that are being separated from their children and not being able to reclaim them after having either a run-in with the police or having mental health hold issues. And if you could get into more contextual information and give us more background about what the issue is specifically that is keeping Black mothers and mothers of color separated from the children.